Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins. Over the past 2 months, Hornets fans have been feeling a lot like Eric Collins during Sunday's win over the Wizards.
You can do it from 50 feet away if you want to, kid. It's going up! Yes! The best third quarter ever!
Very low-key, as you can see, but Collins and everyone else watching Charlotte's NBA franchise deserve something to shout about. After all, it's been 10 agonizing years since the Hornets last made the playoffs, the longest current postseason drought in the NBA. Now, though, Buzz City finally has something to buzz about. The Hornets are in contention for a playoff spot, and they've even won over the likes of Charles Barkley, who is suddenly praising the team on Inside the NBA. Their young core of players includes 24-year-old LaMelo Ball, 23-year-old Brandon Miller, and 20-year-old rookie sensation Con Knipple. And with 23 games left to play, the Hornets have already won more games than they did during the entirety of the past three regular seasons. Charlotte's resurgence has been driven by a young head coach, 41-year-old Charles Lee, and an even younger head of basketball operations, 37-year-old Jeff Peterson. They're building for the future, but in their second year at the helm, they're ahead of schedule. And Jeff Peterson joins us this morning to tell us how they've done it. Jeff, welcome to Charlotte Talks.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. All the support and the opportunity to be on here and share some things with you guys.
Well, let's begin with this. Coming off a 19-win season, how surprised are you and Coach Lee with what's happened this season, particularly in the past 2 months?
You know, I think it just goes back to, you know, all the work that the guys put in this summer. So, you know, yeah, we won 19 games last season. I promise you that everyone was pissed off. Nobody was happy about that. But, you know, the beautiful thing about, you know, being in that situation is you have an option, you have an opportunity, you have a choice to do something about it. And, you know, I give all of our guys credit for being in the summer. Being in the gym for the majority of the summer and putting the work in. And then, you know, you saw a small win with us winning Summer League Championship. And then it just kind of started there. You know, the guys just continued to stay with it, build good habits. Of course, we started the season off a little slow, 4-14. But again, everyone just trusted their work and knew that at some point it would turn. But we just had to continue to build on what we started this past summer.
As you know, last night in Chicago, Coby White played his first game for the Hornets since you acquired him in a trade on February 4th. What did you think of what you saw from him, and what do you think he can bring to this team down the stretch?
Yeah, I was really, really happy for Coby. You know, it's not easy to come back and play in the you know, for the team that actually drafted you, you know, after being out with some injury stuff, but was just happy to be, you know, have him out there. You know, the thing that brings joy to me is just his teammates, how happy they were for him too when he first scored and when he got his tribute video. And look, his pace, his shooting, you know, he made some really, really good reads last night, got some assists, you know, just making the right play. So there's no doubt that, you know, he's going to continue to get comfortable in our system the more he plays and he's around the guys. And just the joy and passion that he plays with, I know it'll be contagious, and I can't wait to, you know, again, have him get a, you know, a larger sample size with our guys.
Now, this Knipple guy you may have heard of, you drafted him with the number 4 pick overall, and boy, has he delivered. He's leading the NBA in three-pointers. He's about to break the rookie record for threes, and he's one of the team's top scorers, obviously. How does this season compare to your expectations?
Yeah, you know, one of the beautiful things with Con is, you know, all the stats that you just rattled off, those things truly don't matter to him. The only thing he cares about is winning the basketball game. So he could go out and make X amount of threes, and if we lose, he's not happy. And that winning mentality certainly is contagious. So we knew, you know, when we drafted him that he was a winner. He's, you know, you go back and look at every level that he's played at, he's won. And we certainly knew just his competitiveness and his his DNA, his IQ would all translate. And I think that the fact that, again, his IQ, his ability to process the game, has allowed him to adapt to this league even quicker than some would have expected. And then, of course, again, you throw in the competitiveness and the skills and the shooting. So we're very fortunate to have him, and we know that he's going to continue to get better.
Last night on the broadcast, Eric Collins said that Con Knipl is never leaving. So no pressure, but as for that next contract.
Con, I can Eric doesn't have much say in the front office stuff, but what I will say is he's spot on with that remark. So
last night, you also got Miles Bridges and Musa Diabate back after they served 4-game suspensions following the fight in the Pistons game on February 9th. We saw, particularly in that third quarter, it was 42-16. The Hornets outscored the Bulls. Now, the Bulls are not having a good season. I think that's a kind way to put it. But how important are those two guys for this team making a playoff push?
Extremely important. You know, those guys, they both bring something different to the game. Of course, Musa, just his energy and activity on the offensive glass. He's done a tremendous job, too, on the offensive end of just making the right read in the half roll situations. His free throws have gotten better. So he's just a relentless competitor. There was a possession last night. He had 2 blocks in the same possession. And, you know, if anyone asked me, like, what does Musa do? I would just show him that clip. He's just flying around. And again, his energy is contagious. And then, of course, Miles, you know, just his durability, his physicalness. I think he's done a tremendous job this year of not falling in love with the three. He can shoot it. He can make it. But at the same time, you know, Charles and the coaching staff have done a nice job with him of, you know, try to utilize his strength sometimes against smaller defenders and having posts a little bit more. So, again, having those guys, just being able to throw a different look on the offensive end. And again, both of them from a defensive standpoint, they can hold their own as well. So having those guys back has been a plus.
That's the voice of Jeff Peterson. He is the head of basketball operations with the Charlotte Hornets, and we are talking all things Hornets today on Charlotte Talks. I mentioned at the beginning of the show Charles Lee, who you hired from the Boston Celtics in 2024. This is his first head coaching job. How would you assess his evolution so far as a head coach?
Yeah, I give Charles and the entire coaching staff a ton of credit. You know, last year, again, we win 19 games, and we knew it was going to be a learning year, if you will, just trying to, you know, figure out what we had. And but again, those guys, that the staff, people don't realize how much time they put in behind the scenes. They watch so many games of our opponents. They watch so many of our games, trying to figure out what we can do better. Those guys, they work their butts off. But you know, this summer, you know, they tweaked a few things with the offense, knowing that we drafted Khan in some positions that we can put him in, and then of course trying to continue to utilize LaMelo and Brandon strengths as well. But they've done a tremendous job. Charles has a special way about him from the standpoint that he can coach you hard, but at the same time, he can love you and say, let's go grab a coffee, or let's go, you know, play some video games, you know, whatever it may be. So he does a really nice job of coaching the guys, which sometimes I think gets lost. You know, sometimes if you're too hard on guys, you know, that some people will interpret that as, oh my gosh, he's being disrespectful or anything like that. But to me, the way I grew up, the way Charles grew up, it's just coaching, and it's tough love, and we all want the same thing, to win. And so no, I think those guys have done a tremendous job.
I'm curious because in the NBA, coaching, while you obviously have to have your X's and O's, and you said all of these guys put in a ton of time analyzing, you have to be able to relate to your players. And, these are obviously people who are the best in the world at what they do. They have egos. They have lots of opinions. What do you think makes Charles in particular good at knowing how to relate to players who are not all the same, obviously, as you know?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. Look, Charles played college basketball. He played overseas. He worked on Wall Street. He was a coach he went to training camp with the Spurs. He was a coach with us in the Hawks. That was 12 years ago. And then goes to Milwaukee and then Boston. So I say all that to say his perspective is pretty unique. He has seen a lot of things, whether it's in the basketball world or the real world. So if you took basketball out of his life, Charles would be able to go talk to anyone on the street. That's just his personality. It's truly a special gift. But He goes to the players' level. You know, again, he makes it a point to really get to know them, what's going on in their lives, like how's their family. You know, when we came to Chicago, you know, it was Kobe, where do you want to eat? You live there forever. Like, we're gonna go have a team dinner. Like, what's the best restaurant? Where do you want to go to after the game? So it's not a transactional relationship at all. You know, he has an open door policy. He invites guys over to his house. So he gets it from that standpoint. And again, I think in my personal belief that that's what makes the guys want to, you know, play even harder for him.
You mentioned LaMelo Ball. Obviously, LaMelo is always in the news, particularly in the last week. He was in the car wreck uptown. No one was hurt, thankfully, other than the cars. He is only 24, as you know, and he's now in his sixth year in the NBA. He's had a lot of injury problems, although this season he's played 33 consecutive games, and he has been out there much more often than not. That's a long summary of trying to get to how do you view LaMelo? What do you see from the inside that maybe some of us outside don't see?
Yeah, LaMelo, the season that he's having has been incredible. You know, he has had to sacrifice some, you know, from a minute standpoint, but at the same time, he understands that what we're doing right now, winning, everyone gets, you know, the love and just the attention. So, you know, I sat down, Charles and I sat down with LaMelo and said, look, we want to take a, you know, kind of be critical of how we can be better of putting, you know, making sure you're available for a minute for you know, for as many games as possible. So one of the things that we did was we told him, you know, we're going to scale back his minutes a little bit. You know, and of course every player wants to play the entire game, but again, just his ability to sacrifice and be professional and say, okay, I got it. So you know, the minute restriction and all that stuff, that came from me. That didn't come from Charles. That didn't come from anyone else. That was directly from me. And again, it was only from the standpoint of wanting him to be available for as many games as possible. But just his maturity level, you know, he had an incredible game the other night against Washington. You know, the 10 threes that he made, but he continued to make the right play. A lot of players would have, you know, just start jacking threes and try to set a record or whatever it may be, but he continued to make the right play. And those are the types of things that we've seen out of LaMelo that lets us know that he's taking another step. Because you know, at that point guard position, it's the most critical position in the NBA. And of course, yes, he can score, but at the same time, you got to be able to think the game. And he's done a tremendous job with that. And there's no doubt that, you know, a lot of our success this year has been because he's been on the court and he's been available and he's been healthy.
As you know, because these guys hired you, the Hornets had new owners. New owners came in August of 2023, Rick Schnall and Gabe Plotkin, and they said, as most owners do, that they wanted to be competitive quickly, but they're backing it up. So for Hornets fans, we only have a little bit of time left here. For Hornets fans, why should they be confident that these owners will go out and spend when they need to?
Yeah, you're seeing it right before our eyes. You know, even on my interview process with Gabe Plotkin and Rick Schnall, as you said, like, you know, they made it a point that we want to be relevant. Excuse me, we want to be resourceful. We want to be, you know, someone that you can come to and say, hey, if we need to spend XYZ, you know, that you can count on us. And they've backed it up with, you know, every bit. You know, you see the arena renovations at Spectrum. We're building a brand new practice facility right across the street that's going to be state of the art. So they have every step of the way. You know, they've never told me no. If we want to make a trade, if we want to do anything from a budget standpoint. So they've been amazing from that standpoint. And again, it's only going to continue to get better.
Well, Jeff Peterson, thank you so much for being with us and good luck the rest of the season.
All right. Thank you guys for having me. Really appreciate it and appreciate the support.
That's Jeff Peterson, and we will talk much more about the Charlotte Hornets. Stay with us right here on Charlotte Talks. Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins, and we are talking all things Charlotte Hornets today. The city's NBA team is finally showing signs of life on the court after a decade in the basketball wilderness. You just heard from Hornets executive Jeff Peterson, and now you'll hear from two reporters who bring much different perspectives to the Hornets. Miron Fader is a senior writer at The Athletic who covers the NBA on a league-wide basis. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Mike Salarte is a familiar face and voice here. He's the sports director at Spectrum News Charlotte. Welcome back, Mike.
Hey, Eric. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me on. And hello, Miriam.
Thank you.
By the way, Mike already pointed out to me during the break that I missed the most important question, which is I did not find out where the Hornets ate on Coby White's advice last night. So we'll have to check back in with Jeff Peterson on that. Lots of choices up there. Miren, I'll begin.
You don't even know. I can assure you, you don't even know.
Miren, I'll begin with you. As someone who covers the NBA from a league-wide perspective, you've had little reason to pay much attention to this franchise until very recently. So a couple weeks ago, you published a lengthy profile of Con Knipple for The Athletic. And I'm curious, what were some of your observations, not only about him, but this team after spending time around them?
They seem to genuinely all like each other, which is something you cannot say for every franchise. I mean, even just the one shoot around practice that I went to, everyone was joking together, having fun. It just seems so genuine, their bond. And I think that so much crosses over to the actual game. And Con, he's right at the center of that. I mean, in about a 10-minute span, I think half the team came up to him and was just giving him high fives and putting their arms around him. I mean, he has the respect of the entire locker room.
And did the obvious make you interested in his story that he was hitting three-pointers at a record rate?
Yes. I'm like, who is this kid? And I say kid because he just looks like this boy next door. And, you know, he's starting to, you know, make waves. And people are like, wait, Charlotte, you want to write about the Hornets? Like, something really special must be happening. So I was like, absolutely, yes. You know, I think Con is somebody that, you know, we all remember at the collegiate level, but to make the transition that he's made in the pros, it's not an easy thing to do. And I was so fascinated about the mental side of the game with him. Yes, we see him make threes and be so well adjusted, so much so that people call him like a 10-year veteran. But I was so much interested in where does the poise come from? Where does the selflessness come from? Where does the hustle come from? And so that's what led me there.
This will be a perfect segue as we get to Mike in just a second, which is he's a huge Chicago Blackhawks fan. So one of Con Knipple's former coaches at Duke told you that Con is a hockey player. What did he mean by that?
Every single day at practice, Con would show up with a black eye, a busted lip, or some other form of injury. And the coach, Emmanuel, he would tell NBA scouts coming into the draft process, you know, Con is a hockey player. He just happens to be great at basketball, which I thought was the classic line. That sums him up. He is all hustle. He's all guts. He plays with so much heart and passion, does not care what happens to his body. He's going to do whatever it takes to win.
So, Mike, Miren just mentioned, you know, that when she pitched this story, Charlotte, you know, why would anybody outside of Charlotte care about the Hornets? That was kind of the feeling for a long time. You and I have both seen a lot of these struggles. So how legit or not do you think this team is? Where are they in their development?
Eric, I think in this team, when you talk about their development, you can't talk about the Hornets' recent years and recent struggles, or let's just say last decade, without addressing the fact that they have been a just brutally injured team. Injuries have riddled this roster. I felt so horrible for Steve Clifford at the end of his run before Charles Lee came in, because he could never get a healthy lineup out there. And then Charles Lee went through 2 years of that. And for the first time in a long time, this group is able to put the same five guys on the floor to start a game. And that's not nothing. You know, I mean, I went through and I was looking. I mean, LaMelo was having a dynamite year because he's on the floor. 22-23, he played 36 games. The year after that, 22. The year after that, 47. That's your guy. I mean, that's your lead singer and the four guys in the glitter suits in the backdrop singing doo-wop. And those guys were out too. So, you know, when you have that continuity of being able to put the same five out there, you're going to see the team play well together. You're going to see them gel. And you're going to say, to Miren's point, you're going to see them having fun. Because this is a team, an overall team, that has been very, very this is just an overall young group. There's not a whole lot of age and you know, hanging on veterans, that sort of thing, on the entire roster. Xavier Tillman is, you know, the elder statesman these days, but they used to have Miles Plumlee or Mason Plumlee and guys that had moved on. This is an overall young group right now, that is finding their way in the NBA together, and they're having a lot of fun doing it right now, and that's translating on the court. It's also translating in the record.
And Mike, when you look at the last 6-8 weeks when this team has really been on a tear, do you think it's as simple as everybody's healthy on the court? Did you see something that flipped for them? What's behind this success, you think?
Well, I mean, I think you have to go probably a little bit further into analytics, but I mean, from the 30,000 foot view, they're having fun together. This is a young group, so they don't know what they don't know. They don't know that they're not supposed to be having this kind of success this early. But you know, it's the NBA, and it's obviously a younger player league. So they're going to have that boundless energy, and they're going to be able to go out every night and not need as much recovery time because they are so young. And again, they're not aged enough to know that, well, we're not supposed to be playing this well, but we just keep going out and doing it. I think if you want to look statistically at this team, their defense has been lights out, because I've lost track of the number of teams they've held under 100 points. Mm-hmm. And they did it to Chicago last night. The Bulls even had the last possession where they could have hoisted a three to make it a respectable 29-point difference as opposed to what they got beat by. But they didn't do it. Like, the Bulls were like, okay, enough. We give, you know. 131-99, sufficient. You've won the game. We don't need to do anymore. But their defense has been so good. You know, being able to hold Houston on the road at this front end of this win streak, or the 9-game win streak, I should say, hold them under 100. That doesn't happen. You know, I mean, it just doesn't happen very often. So I think the biggest switch that you can tangibly look at in terms of win-loss record and the scores has been their defense, keeping teams under 100 and letting their offense cook. I mean, you know, Miran talked about Con Knipple. I felt bad when the Hornets drafted Con, because I covered him with Duke last spring. And so I was with them in New Jersey, and I was with them at the Final Four, and I'm sure he was tired of seeing my face. And the next thing you know, he gets drafted. I was like, hey, Con, me again, you know. So, you know, I felt horrible for the kid, but I have loved watching him play and develop. And, you know, fastest player in NBA history to 200 threes, doing that last night in game 58, beating Duncan Robinson's record by 11 games. I mean, that's just – he has been everything that – he has been as good as advertised, if not even better.
Someone should do a long profile. Oh, that's why Miran Fader is here.
Hey, we would do that on the TV side. We just can't get access to Con away from the floor. That's the problem.
Miran, as I mentioned, you've been around the NBA for a long time. You've seen you know, all kinds of top players, top teams. You mentioned Hornets. You know, it's been a long time since they've been anywhere near the spotlight. What's your sense of awareness that the Hornets are a better team, and just kind of where they stand in the NBA at the moment?
I mean, usually when teams make jumps like this, they have made jumps not just in terms of player, but personnel. You can see the way that the Hornets, you know, really have rebuilt top to bottom. I mean, Jeff Peterson deserves a lot of credit. This is not a thing that happened overnight. And so my sense is that, you know, a lot of fans, especially casual observers, they only check in when they see the win streak. But for those who really love the game, have noticed what Charlotte has been doing over the last couple of years, and they appreciate the long haul. We see a lot of this in some of the best NBA teams. Look at what the Thunder have done. Again, starts with management. It starts with, you know, a long-term vision. And a lot of teams really burn out because they don't have the patience to wait like that, and they don't have the right personnel who understand talent and evaluating beyond a physical capacity. But the most successful teams, like Charlotte, like the Thunder, teams like that, that have really waited to have their time in the sun, it just takes enormous amount of strategizing. And I think that it's the first time, at least in my career, which is, you know, over a decade now, where editors ask for Charlotte pieces. It's awesome. Like, I think it's really cool. And the amount of excitement around it is so genuine. And you can tell that fans, this means something to them on a very deep personal level. And it does not matter how far the Hornets go, just what they've done already means more than even words can describe for the average, you know, Charlotte fan.
That's the voice of Miren Fader. She is a senior writer who covers the NBA at The Athletic. Also with us is Mike Solarte, who is the sports director at Spectrum News Charlotte. Miren, the Hornets, as you know, are 28-31 right now. Jeff mentioned they started 4-14. So if you're not really aware of the arc of this story, you could look at it and say, well, gosh, they're 28-30. You know, they're not even 500. Obviously, all of us on this show know that they've made a dramatic leap. How important do you think it is from a perception and fan standpoint for the Hornets to find a way to get into the playoffs this year?
I mean, it's huge. It would be pretty disappointing if it didn't happen, but it's huge because look at how young this roster is. I mean, we think of playoff success, we think of veterans, we think of players that have been there before. For this young, scrappy, up-and-coming team, I mean, it's critical to have that experience. I was looking online and I saw a meme of Charlotte players going hard in the paint, and somebody was like, prepping for that playoff series with Detroit. And I was like, okay, everyone is really in the spirit. Everyone is like willing this to happen. I think that they are more battle tested than their record may indicate. I think that their youth could actually be a superpower instead of something that, you know, will cause them to not be as poised or fall short in the end. The one thing about youth is you play so hard because you are trying so hard and you want it so badly. You're going to make a ton of mistakes, but you're also going to do some really, really good things. And I think that this team is so special when it just lets the players figure it out.
Now, Mike, as you know, there are 23 games left in the regular season. The Hornets play in Indianapolis tomorrow night. They've had a tough time with the Pacers, actually, this year. And then I think they're home for Portland on Saturday. I'm assuming you may have at least peeked a little bit ahead as you look at the last couple of months. What do you think the chances are to make a little run here to the playoffs?
I'll be honest with you, Eric. I haven't peeked ahead because it's been so much fun going game by game with this group. You know, you just kind of, okay, they're in Chicago. Okay, that's a pretty winnable game. See how they get through that. Get everybody, you know, get out of there with everybody healthy. If you can pick up a win, great. Go on to Indianapolis, take on the Pacers. If you can get through the Pacers, the team that's giving them trouble, you can get back home. You know, I think the only time I really look ahead is to see, okay, so they're on the road the next three. So the TV, I've got to record this, you know, that sort of thing, just planning work stuff. But right now, I'm with Miren. I think it would be disappointing if they don't make the playoffs, and they're in that position right now. I'm actually thinking a little bigger picture. I'm going to be kind of disappointed if this team doesn't make top six. Mm-hmm. Because that's not, you know, 3 months ago, top, you know, getting in the play-in was like, I don't know. I don't know if they can do that. I mean, it's close, but then they put together that remarkable January, and they carried it through, you know, first almost 3 weeks of February. And that's missing, you know, with missing two key pieces in Bridges and Diabate for four games. And they got through that 2-2, you know, with losses to, Houston and Cleveland on back-to-back nights coming out of the All-Star break. I take that, you know, I take that against a good team in the West and a very good team in the East. So you get through those two and you plug those guys back in and now they can start rolling again. You know, with 23 games to go, I honestly think with the momentum that they're carrying, and to Miren's point that, you know, the youth can be a superpower for them down the stretch, because they will be, just based on their youth, they're going to be a fresher team as they're taking on the veteran squads down the end. The question is, how will they hold up? Every game matters as you're trying to play, make your way into the playoffs, but as you're trying to seal that spot, and the pressure starts to ramp up, how will they react? How will they meet the moment, as it were? Also to Miren's point, and I'm so glad I'm on with her. She's brilliant. you don't know, you know, talking about their youth, and they're gonna be youthful. They're gonna make mistakes. Jeff Peterson and Charles Lee and that entire coaching staff have let them play through their mistakes. You know, okay, we admit you don't know everything there is to know about the NBA. So go out there and do your best, and we'll try to fix stuff as you go. But these kids make their mistakes. They learn from them, and they're not making them again. They're not repeating the same mistakes. They're better, you know, they're better on closeouts. They're better in the switches. They're doing all the right things. And that learned behavior continues to repeat itself. So, I think to answer your question, I've kind of gone off on a tangent like I do, but I'll be disappointed if they don't make top six because I bought in. I bought into what this group can do. I bought into what they've done so far, and the future looks so, so bright for them.
And Marion, since you're carrying the show, we're gonna give you yet more to do. So since this is not an audience entirely made up of hardcore basketball fans, if you can explain in layman's terms how the NBA playoffs work, because Mike mentioned the play-in, which is different from the playoffs, and you can just share a little bit of how that works.
Yeah, well, the NBA has been trying to find ways to make the casual fan more interested. And you know, I think viewership, at least from where I sit and the people that I am around, my closest people to me know nothing about basketball, but they love the personalities, they love the narratives, they love the drama. And so the NBA is trying to cater to those people that maybe they see Khan and they say, huh, Midwest boy, what's going on there? I want to watch Charlotte. Or maybe they see somebody else and they're like, huh, that guy is so interesting. I'd like to watch him. And so the NBA has done things to increase competitiveness, also increase revenue, also find ways to attract television ratings, which is a whole nother podcast for a whole nother time, and viewership. And so they've created things like, you know, the play-in tournament and other things. And we just had the All-Star game and the format was new for the first time. And so it was really exciting to see a Team World, Team USA, like different ways to make the game more competitive, fast, engaging. I think that's the thing. The NBA is trying to make itself more engaging. It sees itself competing, not with the NFL, not with the MLB, but Netflix, with Amazon Prime, with all these different ways that we consume basketball or we want to be involved with whatever's popular. And so that's what the NBA is trying to do. And so to kind of tie it up with Charlotte, people have seen Khan's face. They may not understand anything about basketball, but they want to watch him play.
And we need to take a quick time out because you want to hear more from Mirren and from Mike, and we will talk much more about the Hornets. Stay with us right here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg in for Mike Collins, and we are continuing our conversation about the Charlotte Hornets, who suddenly look like a solid NBA team. Look no farther than last night when Charlotte turned a close game against the Bulls into a blowout with a blistering third quarter that included a 22-2 run, and think lots of swarming defense as well. The Hornets are now 28-31, and they play the Pacers in Indiana tomorrow night. And Mirren, we were talking about the NBA and what they're doing to compete as an entertainment entity, and with the play-in itself, stop me when I go wrong, it never takes long. Right now, the Hornets are in 10th place in the East. The bottom, or the 10th, 9th, 8th, and 7th teams participate in the play-in tournament, and then they join the other six, two of those teams join the other six, and that's where we start the playoffs. Is that right?
That's right. And it's really exciting because there's something at stake. Like, that's what makes this such a great addition, is like you're fighting. It reminds me of, you know, March Madness in a way, of like the 16th seed can face the first seed, that type of drama of just anything can happen. And so I really actually love this idea of the bottom half gutting it out to get that last spot.
Mike, I wanted to ask you, going back to excitement around the team. You've watched Charlotte sports teams for many years. You've been in Spectrum Center plenty of nights when maybe it wasn't full or maybe it wasn't enthusiastic. Attendance is up 6% this season, and obviously the team is playing much better. What do you see and hear that is different than past seasons? Off the court, that is.
Yeah, well, first off, if numbers weren't numbers, I would challenge the 6%. Increase, because you know, the one thing I have learned, and I've been here, it's nice for you to say I've been there many years, I've been in Charlotte since 2002, so I was here before the Bobcats returned, or before Charlotte got the team back as the Bobcats, and the one thing I have learned about Charlotte basketball fans, and no disrespect to the Panthers fans who are terrific, Charlotte Hornet basketball fans, they take it personal about their team. Like they you know, they don't want you bad-mouthing their group, even though the outside world's had plenty of reason to badmouth this franchise since their return as Bobcats and Hornets. They don't like it, and because they're very passionate about it, because this was the first pro team in the city. You know, they predated the Panthers. So when you start seeing the success that they're having, you know, and social media didn't exist back when the team returned, but when they started having the success, you know, those fans started to stick their chests out a little bit, and rightfully so. They've waited a long time for this, waited a long time for this team to be, you know, good and relevant in the conversation. And as you pointed out, they're 3 games under .500. But as exciting as they've been over the course of the last 6, 8, 7 weeks, there's a lot of reason for folks to feel good about this team. And, you know, I think that as you watch this group continue to learn and grow and play and get better, that's just going to continue. And we talked about the youth on this roster. I mean, these guys could be together for quite a good, you know, run of time here. So it could be the start of something really, really special. So, but I will also say this, that, I mean, I've been inside Spectrum Center on a Monday night game, and also been there on a Friday or a Saturday. And there's the only difference that you see in the crowd is whether it's a school night or not, you know, and even then, you know, they still get a pretty good number. They were still doing pretty decent numbers for a Monday in the lean times. And now it's one of the hottest tickets in town. So, again, full marks to the Hornets fans, because they're fans. If they can go through what they've gone through with this franchise for the last 10 years, which is to say nothing about previous iterations, you know, be loud. Wear your purple and teal and show it off, because you've got every reason to be proud of this group.
The one that got me, Mike, was the weekend. I think it was the first snowstorm, maybe ice storm. I can't remember how we defined those, because I'm a Southerner and I can't do winter. But anyway, everything was shut down. The Hornets had to play on a Monday afternoon. Nobody could go anywhere other than Harris Teeter, but that building was pretty full. So when it came to basketball, everybody was able to figure it out.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was no reason to go to Harris Teeter because all the bread and milk was gone.
That's right.
So, that's the thing. Hornets fans will find a way. They found a way to get there through the ice storm, which was first, and then through the snowstorm, which came after that the following weekend. I have such respect for Hornets fans, because, you know, and same thing with Panthers fans, because they went through a 10-year spell as well without going to the playoffs, and they've hung in there with their teams. And so, it really is exciting to see the excitement building, because I give Nick Carboni a lot of grief, because, you know, he got to town right at the end of the Panthers Super Bowl run, and then they didn't go to the playoffs, you know, after that. And he's like, maybe it's me. And then, so when the Panthers started to get good and the Hornets started to get good, I actually sent him a text message and said, everybody's good again. Welcome back. You know, welcome to town. So Nick's a good friend. It was funny that he brought that up. So I kind of needle him every chance I get.
Nick Carboni, you get to stay is the message. That's the voice of Mike Solarte. He is the sports director at Spectrum News Charlotte. Also with us today is Miren Fader. She's a senior writer who covers the NBA for The Athletic. Miren, I want to ask you, we were talking about LaMelo Ball earlier, and it still amazes me that he's only 24 in his sixth NBA season. And as I was asking Jeff Peterson, there are always a lot of things swirling around LaMelo, particularly in this past week, because he was in the car wreck in Uptown Charlotte. You saw him play and covered him when he was in Lithuania before he became an NBA player. And I'm curious what your impressions were of him then. How did he strike you, not only as just a player, but as a person?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I spent about a month in Lithuania when he went out of high school. So he was 15 going on 16, and then followed him again in Australia the following year pre-draft. And in both instances, I told myself, I want to see and experience LaMelo for who he is, not who narratives say he is, right? As a writer, you are used to what the public perception is, and your goal is to try to find out the private, the person, what makes them truly who they are as human beings. And I did not see anything like the narrative, which was something that honestly still follows him today, that he is not serious, immature, selfish, ball hog, doesn't care about winning, spoiled, arrogant. I actually saw the complete opposite. I saw extreme discipline, work ethic, somebody who cared about his team. I mean, everyone on both Lithuanian teams and Australian teams loved him. I mean, he is a locker room favorite. He does things like stay after with teammates to rebound for them. I saw him take care of his mom who had a stroke. So it's very hard for me to square the current version of him and, you know, the immaturity that we do see at times, especially with this recent car wreck, because I think he is so much more than what people think he is. And he still has a lot of growing up to do. And that is clear. And that's also true of anyone his age in the NBA. It's just that he has always been on a higher platform and standard because of the family expectations and the things that he could not control, like his dad hyping him up when he was 11 years old, 12 years old. So I think LaMelo is a lot more complex than people realize. And finally, the one thing I really came away with from Lithuania is that he actually loves basketball. And I know that sounds like a strange thing to say. You should hope that somebody who could potentially lead your franchise loves the game of basketball. However, as somebody that has covered this game for a while, people who are highly touted as 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, and 12-year-olds actually hate the game of basketball. They are forced to play 10 games in one weekend. They are shuffled from gym to gym. They are given lavish gifts, but they feel empty spiritually. LaMelo has had the upbringing that a lot of prospects would envy, but he also learned to love the game on his own sincerely and genuinely, and I still see that love in him today.
That's a really interesting point. It makes me think of Andre Agassi in the memoir when he talked about just how he absolutely hated tennis, and that makes a lot of sense. Mike, I'm curious from your standpoint with LaMelo. He's such a high-profile athlete. He can be very flashy on the court and off it, you know, with what he drives, what he wears, but he's very quiet. Yeah, we don't know a lot about LaMelo. I would contrast him with Cam Newton. You know, Cam, we heard from Cam seemingly all the time. And now, of course, we really hear from him because he's on ESPN every day. But we don't know a ton about LaMelo Ball. So how do you view LaMelo and what you've seen of him?
Well, I mean, first off, Marin, with that great background of having been with him over in Lithuania and the like, really got to peel back the layers a bit. But I think the comparison of LaMelo and Cam is actually really, really good. Because, you know, LaMelo is, and I want to get this thought out of my head because I thought of it when Mira was talking, but, you know, LaMelo's had to go through so much at a young age that, you know, he's got some growing up to do, as Mira said, and I couldn't agree more. But it's also, you know, I was 24 once. It was a long time ago, but I wasn't the starting point guard for an NBA team at 24 and had been living internationally for 2 years while learning the game and going through all the things and had the hype machine behind me. So LaMelo's not the average 24-year-old kid. Okay. And I, you know, he's just not an average 24-year-old young man. And so he's had to go, it's hard trying to grow up in the spotlight. And, you know, Cam Newton had to do the same thing. He had to grow up in that spotlight. Think about his, I mean, everybody knew who he was at Blinn. Everybody knew who he was at Florida. Everybody knew who he was at Auburn. And everybody knew who he was in the NFL because of what he did on the football field. But we never really got to know Cam Newton, the football, the person. We just knew the football player and the persona and the aura and everything. LaMelo is that same kind of guy. And you're right. We don't know very much about him because he doesn't really – He loves playing basketball. He loves being on the court. He loves putting on a uniform and making threes and slinging passes and throwing up lobs and all the things he does so very well. And he gets in his car and he drives away. Like unless you're in his circle, you don't really know. And I think maybe that has to do with maybe he kind of has closed the ranks around him and only the ones that get inside that circle are the ones that really know him, and that's fine. I mean, you know, look, I'd love to know more about LaMelo Ball. I really would. I'd love to know what makes him tick. Not, you know, I don't care what he drives or what he wears. I'd like to know where he gets his ideas for his clothes, you know, what inspires him, that sort of thing. But I have nothing negative to say about LaMelo, because you just really don't know who he is as a person. And maybe that's by design, but you do know what he can do on the floor. And I totally respect the skills. I totally respect what he does and his love of the game and the way he plays. And I'm just glad he's finally healthy, because the last three seasons have been just so rough for him in that aspect. And Miren, I'm sure you saw it all around the world when he was playing. When he's on the floor, there's no happier place in his world than when he's running up and down the floor. So it's good to see the joy back in his eyes and in his face and in his expressions, because he's not dealing with an ankle. He's not dealing with a wrist or an elbow or a shoulder or anything, knee. He's just playing basketball. He's doing what he loves.
Miren, I want to go back to where we started the show, which was with Jeff Peterson, who is the head of basketball operations. I mentioned he's not even 40 yet. Charles Lee is 41. These are young guys in big jobs. You see teams and monitor them all across the country. You see how hard it is to win. What's your initial assessment of these guys being long-term fixtures in Charlotte?
I mean, I think that it shows that basketball intelligence and what makes a truly successful organization does not have to do with traditional things of, you know, this person knows this person and the hiring tree. You always hear about the politics that go on as far as hiring coaches, hiring GMs. When you do things different, you hire younger people, you get different energy in there. You have people that take their experiences from different organizations, like Coach Lee and all the places that he's been. You really see that the future is bright. And what's always struck me as somebody that tries to profile prospects when they are at their youngest is that there is this paradox in the NBA. They want players to succeed and be at their max potential when they're at their youngest. And that is like virtually impossible for like 99% of them. And the same crazy standard goes for franchises and winning records. And everybody wants things right now. Everybody wants success immediately. But I look at what Charlotte's done and I'm just like, you know what? Greatness takes time. Maybe it's not this year, but what if it's next year? Look at Detroit. I mean, I profiled Cade Cunningham and he was talking about the absolute worst all-time losing streak. Everything felt like it was ending and now everyone's a Pistons fan. So I'm just, you know, good things take time. You need young, bright energy to turn things around, patience. Look at Cade, look at the job that he's done now. I would love to see LaMelo in 3 years. I would love to see Brandon Miller in 3 years. Con, are you kidding? Like, the future's so bright.
Mike, as we're coming into our final minute or so, I have to ask you, you mentioned Nick Carbonian giving him a little grief about all the agony. So we had the Panthers in the playoffs, as you know, a month ago. We had Charlotte FC in the playoffs in November for the second year in a row. There's the possibility of the Hornets. What's going on around here?
Hey, it's, you know, it's all cyclical. It's all cyclical. You know, it's been a very tough ask for fans of the Hornets and the Panthers to, as the Philadelphia 76ers used to tell us, trust the process. And that those three words strung together make every sports fan cringe. But the Hornets have built something here, and it's taken a couple of years for Jeff Peterson and Charles Lee to get it going in the right direction. I still maintain that for the Hornets, the health was the biggest thing holding them back, because they haven't changed this core group that much. They're all healthy. They're all playing together. So what's going on here? I don't know, but I'm having a lot of fun covering it. I have to say that.
That has to be the last word. I've had a lot of fun talking to Miren Fader from The Athletic, Mike Solarte from Spectrum News Charlotte. Our thanks to Jeff Peterson, the Hornets head of basketball operations. And we have a lot more Hornets basketball to watch. We'll see if they can sneak into the playoffs. They resume play tomorrow night in Indiana against the Pacers. For Mike Collins, I'm Eric Spanberg. Thanks for joining us on Charlotte Talks.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.